Many of you have asked for it, and so I spent some of my paternity leave creating it, an introductory Stoicism course. The best part? I've launched it using Gumroad's Pay What You Want model. So if you want to pay $0, you can get the course for free. That's right, free. Learn more and enroll in the course by going to understandingstoicism.com. That's understandingstoicism.com.
I have used a lot of commerce platforms in the past. By far, the most robust is Shopify. No matter how complex your business needs and no matter how large your business grows, Shopify can handle it. And they do handle it for brands like Rothy's, Ruggable, Allbirds, Knox, Magnolia, Brooklinen, Glossier, and Cotton, to name a few. You may already use another e-commerce platform, and you may be super unhappy with it, but you've already put a lot of work into it, and migrating to Shopify could seem impossible. But I'm here to tell you that it is quite easy. When I migrated to Shopify back in 2022, their apps and tools meant I just had to make a few clicks, and everything was ported over as if by magic. Shopify also lets you design your storefront however you like, which, from personal experience, I know isn't the case for many other commerce platforms out there. All these features and all this control can result in more sales more often, so stop leaving sales on the table. Switch your business to Shopify today and discover why millions trust Shopify as their all-in-one commerce platform to build, grow, and run their businesses. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/practical, all lowercase. That's 1 month for just $1 at shopify.com/practical. shopify.com/practical.
Good morning, Prakavtan. No ads for anyone today, and that is in honor of the big, big, little news. Little Baby Mochi, which is the nickname we've given our son until he's born, is going to be here by the end of day Monday. My wife is being induced over the weekend, and we're both so excited to meet our little dude, our little amazing dude. The last 11 months of my life have been absolutely a mad rush of change. And it all culminates in the birth of our son. To say I'm excited is not just an understatement, though. It's a complete failure of the English language to have better vocabulary to describe this particular feeling. But it is, dare I say, a virtuous one. You'll get to hear his name soon, too, and maybe a little bit of his babbling into the microphone, which will be super cute, unless he spits up on it. But, you know, that's what editing is for. Also, there's another piece of news, far less exciting, at least for me, but probably far more exciting for all of you. I have been working with a handful of patrons of this podcast for the last week or so to conceptualize and design something that many of you have been asking me to create for a long time, almost since the start of this show. And so today I am opening up membership to enroll in what we're calling the Secret Society of Stoics. Insert mysterious music here, which I don't have licensing for, so you'll have to imagine it. Membership to the Secret Society of Stoics includes a lot, like a monthly book club, monthly calls, weekly journaling prompts, and a lot more. This society is intended for those who aren't just looking to learn more about Stoicism, but are also interested in living its values and creating a better world for themselves and their communities. It's not something for people who don't want to take it seriously. It is not like a fan club. It's something more like a secret society. You can learn a little bit more, though not too much more, because it is, again, a secret, by going to secretsocietyofstoics.com. Please do not join this group if you are not interested in advancing your Stoic practice in the real world. This is not a study group. Please do join it if it sounds like what you've been looking for. Also, it's limited to 100 people because, to be frank, I don't think if more people are in this group than 100, that it will offer the same value to its members. So I'm limiting how many people can join this intentionally. And I am certain it will fill up quickly. There are tens of thousands of you out there. Again, that is secretsocietyofstoics.com. Now, on to today's episode. where we're going to talk about improving our self-esteem. And I think this one will get deeper than anyone, including me, expects it to. So get ready. Low self-esteem is best conceptualized as a lack of self-approval. If we have a weak sense of self-esteem, it means we do not approve strongly of ourselves. Perhaps this is the first time you've heard it worded this way. And if that's the case, I'd like you to just sit with that for a minute. And now, with me, say this: I do not approve of myself. I do not approve of myself. Now, some of you, and I'm not making fun or taking shots, will tear up when you say this, or at least feel a strong emotional response. It will not feel nice, but that's a good thing. It is a good thing to connect with our emotional pain, to interface with it. And if we're able to feel that connection with our pain, just by saying, I do not approve of myself, it indicates that those words we've just spoken speak directly to the source of our emotional pain. It should feel a little bit, or a lot of bit, like being leveled by a sharp criticism or piece of critical but true feedback. I do not approve of myself. Great. Now we know that's what this is about, our own self-approval. We don't approve of what and who we are. This means we know our destination as we set out on our quest to improve self-esteem. Our destination is approval of ourselves. What is it you don't approve of? Are you too fat? Are you too skinny? Are you out of shape? Are you too weak? Are you too shy? Are you too aggressive? Are you too inconsiderate? Are you too sad? Are you too angry? Don't just nod or shake your head, by the way, while I'm asking these questions. Pause this podcast and write down your answers to the question, what about me do I not approve of? It could be a short list or a long one, but I want you to write it down. If you're struggling with self-esteem, that is. If you're not struggling with self-esteem, you've probably already skipped this episode. So now you've got your list. Great. Now we're going to make another list. This list is going to list all the things you approve of about yourself. Are you a talented artist? A good singer? A good friend? Are you physically fit? Are you a healthy eater? Are you kind to animals? Again, don't just nod or shake your head. This is an interactive episode. List these things down. Now you've got two lists, and you've got something else. These two lists should provide you with some important perspective. You are not a person of no value. You're not even a person of low self-esteem. Instead, you're a dynamic person that probably gives an undue amount of weight to the things you wish you were better at, or to the opinions of others. This is an important thing to recognize because it highlights that part of your problem is this: you're focusing on what you don't approve of instead of what you do approve of. For some of us, and I'm included in some of us, by the way, it is easier to say, "Ugh, I'm miserable because I'm not XYZ," than it is to say, "Man, I'm feeling pretty great because I am ABC." But it is true of all of us that we are some things and we are not some other things, that we have some things and we do not have other things. That's true of everyone. And whether or not we lean towards more easily identifying those things we are or have, or those things we aren't or don't have, is a quality of our characters. We've habituated a tendency to see the negative, in my case, more readily than we see the positive. But this is reversible through intentional choice. The previous episode of this podcast about breaking habits is one you should go back and listen to if you need a refresher on this. But everything about your character comes down to what you've habituated, and everything related to changing those habituations come down to becoming an active participant in your own life by exercising the power of choice you wield as a conscious being, as a human being. With this new perspective, if it's new, that you're not 100% disapproving of yourself, you will, hopefully, find yourself in a bit of a different headspace to consider the following question. Ask yourself, these things that I don't approve of about myself, why don't I approve of them? In answering this question, I want you to think about to whom these things matter. Do you disapprove of your shyness, for example, because you think other people want you to be less shy? Or do you disapprove of your shyness because you think it causes you to miss out on important things in your life that matter to you? You want to identify what things on your disapproving list are present because you believe they need to change for your own sake, and which are present because you feel others want you to change those things for their sake. Your self-esteem is never linked to not being what others think you should be. It is always linked to what you think you should be. So if there's something you disapprove of about yourself, and the reason you disapprove of it is because your family disapproves of it, for example, then it isn't really you who disapproves of it. You're 100% going to have low self-esteem if you spend your time trying to shape yourself into a person you don't actually approve of, just to keep others happy. A really good example of this might be your sexuality. If you're gay, but you feel ashamed of being gay because your family is ashamed of you being gay, the answer is not to try to overcome your sexuality, not least because it's probably not possible to do that, but the answer is instead to prioritize your own approval of who you are over the approval of others. And I'm using sexuality as an example, just because it's low-hanging fruit that I think is easy for everyone to understand. But it could also be your introversion or your extroversion. Maybe you're very quiet. Maybe you're very bombastic and loud. Or your nerdiness, or your love of football, or philosophy, or acting, or your passion to become a circus clown. All of these things are things that might not be normative in your, again, for example, family, or in your immediate community. And so all of these things can generate external disapproval and prompt you to feel as if you need to prioritize external opinion and the meeting of external expectations over internal opinion and self-approval. And it is categorically unstoic to believe that you can, in the first place, or that you should, attempt to control the opinions of others through contortion of your own thoughts, actions, or attitudes. You cannot make the outside world approve of you. It is not possible. And so the surest road to low self-esteem, to suffering, which Epictetus and other Stoics were very clear about, is to mistake what is beyond our ability to choose for what is within our ability to choose. Beyond our ability to choose is the opinions of others. Within our ability to choose is our opinion of ourselves. Low self-esteem, or self-love, or self-approval, however you want to word it, is, in part, the very suffering that the Stoics were talking about. It is the result of attempting to make others like you, which doesn't mean you're actively attempting to manipulate people. It means you're actively, even if seemingly subconsciously, trying to manipulate yourself away from what you are. But here's the thing, and this is the hard part of fixing one's self-esteem. We must sort out what things we disapprove of because we disapprove of them, and what things we disapprove of because others disapprove of them. This is why I had you make that first list. The second list was for perspective. The first list was so you could separate your disapprovals into two columns right now. That's what we're going to do. One column for them, the other column for me. If it's for them, and you identify that right now, it's going to lift some weight off your shoulders. It's not going to immediately make you approve of yourself entirely, in concerns to those items anyway, but it is absolutely going to be a turning point in how you regard yourself in concern to those things that you only disapprove of because others disapprove of them, because you're recognizing it, and it may be the first time you've done that. The items on the for me list, however, will, of necessity, unavoidably, be only the things that you can actually change about yourself because they will be both things you truly want to change and things you have the ability to choose to change. As an example, under for them, you might have, I'm too shy, I don't want the same career as my parents, people don't find me attractive. And under for me, you might have, I'm overweight, I don't feel well-read or smart, and I don't feel very attractive. Now, there's one item that's on both of these lists, and I'll talk about that one in a minute. But first, you're too shy. Okay, well, what does other people being upset that you're shy have to do with whether shyness is worthy of your own self-disapproval or approval? The sage can be shy. Zeno was shy. In fact, one of the reasons, which is well documented, that he left the Cynic school in the first place and founded his own school was because he was too modest and shy a man to buy into the antics and extremes of the Cynics of his time. Shyness and modesty aren't that unrelated. You may be shy as a function of your character, but is this an evil? On the contrary, living according to your own character is to live in accordance with nature when your own character is not an aversion to nature. Is shyness an aversion to nature? Certainly it isn't. You also don't want the same career as your parents. Okay, well, your parents might be really upset about that. Maybe they want you to be a doctor and you want to be a poet or an electrician or a poet electrician. You'd be the first, maybe. Certainly they'll disapprove. But what does their disapproval say of you? Only that you didn't meet their expectations. But what does it say of them? That they're fools. No offense to your parents. They're fools who thought their expectations enabled them to have the freedom of choice over something that wasn't their own thoughts, attitudes, or actions. Namely, what you chose as a career. Epictetus would have certainly chided your parents quite rightly in this situation. Others don't find you attractive. Okay, we're going to cover this here, and we're going to circle back to it for the next list, because it's there too. But on the for them list, you have to understand that expecting to be able to choose whether others find you attractive makes you as foolish as the parents in the previous example. It is not up to you how other people find you. It is also worth thinking about how many people you might notice in a day who you don't find attractive, but who you witness daily in relationships with people who do find them attractive and in fact love them. Attractiveness isn't about looks, even if it starts that way sometimes. Attraction is always attraction to character, even if it doesn't start that way. When you leave your spouse after 20 years of marriage, for example, you don't do it because they've suddenly become ugly. You do it because something about who they are has changed, and that change has made them unattractive to you. The same is true when you fall in love, by the way. You don't fall in love with the face of your partner, though it might start that way. You fall in love with their character. How attractive you appear to others isn't just something you can't choose, it's also something that has nothing to do with whether people, broadly, find you attractive in any meaningful way. Now for the for you list. You're overweight. Okay, so what are you going to do about that? Because it's only you who can do something about it. And maybe that doing something involves medication. Maybe it involves surgery. Maybe it just involves a responsible diet with a healthy calorie deficit and smart food choices. But no matter what it requires, all the things it will require will be within your ability to choose. It is up to you if you lose weight and get more physically fit. It is up to no one else. Do you want to lose weight? Will it make you more approving of yourself? Then make the choice that is yours to make. You don't feel well-read or smart. You feel dumb about philosophy or science, for example. First, do you need to be smart in these things? Are you sure this item is on the right list? It could be, but are you trying to be better at geography, for example, because you'd like to be better at geography for yourself? Or are you looking to impress someone or gain another person's approval or a group's approval? A well-rounded education is useful to a man or woman. And so this might be on the right list. Like I said, just be sure you're not trying to live for someone else's expectations. Make sure you're living for your own. And here too, just like losing weight or getting healthier, the change you want to make is within your ability to choose to make. You can choose to read more, or you could choose to listen to more audiobooks if you don't have time to read more. You can choose to make incremental progress in an appropriate way. And making progress in an appropriate way is always appropriate. You don't feel very attractive. All right, we're back to this old chestnut. You don't feel attractive. This one is actually fairly hard to solve. It's very insidious. I'm lucky not to feel unattractive too often, though I also don't feel attractive. I'm just blessed with my own attractiveness being of absolutely no concern to me. And that's more of a luck of the draw kind of thing than anything I've chosen. It's a habituated part of my character that happened subconsciously or before I could make any of my own choices. And I am in no way interested in changing that because, again, it's a blessing to feel neither way about my attractiveness. It's kind of nice. It's like having a little bit of armor in some way. But some people do feel deeply unattractive. And here are a pair of thoughts that might help you with this. When you ask an atheist what evidence they would require to believe in God, you'll find, if you continue speaking with them long enough, that there's actually no reasonable evidence that would suffice, because any proof you might show them could be a clever trick carried out by someone more clever or technologically advanced than them. For example, a super advanced alien culture might be able to show you something that you would think only God could do, but they're just super advanced. So that evidence wouldn't count, to the atheist anyway. Likewise, when you ask a theist what evidence they would require to stop believing in God, you will find, rather quickly, that there's no reasonable evidence that would suffice because faith is unconcerned with evidence. That is why it is called faith. So now let me ask you, what evidence would you require to believe you were attractive? Is there any evidence whatsoever? If you cannot name the evidence, then you are like the atheist or the theist. You say you can change your mind, maybe even that you're looking to change your mind, but there's nothing powerful enough to actually make you do that. You're not being intellectually honest with yourself. And this should make you feel a little bit silly. Hopefully, right now, if this applies to you, it's making you chuckle. You've taken on the religion of ugly, to put it in a comedic way, or the complete denial of beauty. And that is a deeply entrenched belief that is going to be hard to disabuse yourself of. And so here is the last bit of advice I have on attractiveness. It doesn't exist. There is no such thing as attractive, only subjective interpretation of outward appearances when it comes to how others interpret your outward appearance. And this is beyond your ability to choose. And so you cannot use external, subjective approval of beauty as a barometer of your or anyone else's objective degree of beauty. It is both illogical and impossible. And before I continue, I'll make a book recommendation. It's not a Stoic book or a book about philosophy. It's a book about art, in fact. It's called On Ugliness, and it was written by Umberto Eco. I will link it in the show notes. It's worth a read. And all of this is the same internally. It is a mirror reflection of what I've just described. The outside world has impressed upon you so strongly what it thinks is beautiful that when you look in the mirror and don't see that description of beauty reflected back at you, you think you are not beautiful, and so you internalize the idea that you aren't attractive. You think you don't find yourself attractive, but that's not true. What's really happening is that you've allowed this portion of your rational faculty to be usurped by perceived external opinions. I promise you, I could find 1,000 people who thought you were gorgeous. And if I put you in a village populated only by those people, within a week, you'd think you were the most handsome individual on earth. And all your self-esteem issues on this front would be gone. So you are in fact doing that thing you shouldn't be doing. You're trying to live up to external expectations. Your opinion of beauty isn't your own until it's your own, and it's not your own until you realize that beauty doesn't exist anywhere but in one's character. And as soon as you realize that, you become attractive to yourself by virtue of the quality of your character, something you do have complete control over. Thanks for listening today. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. Again, a reminder, the Secret Society of Stoics. It's open to 100 members. I hope you will join it. You will get a lot out of it. But again, please do not join if you do not want to take it seriously. It is a place for, I guess, serious people. Sounds strange to say, but it is. Again, you can learn more at secretsocietyofstoics.com. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, take care.